From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist in Los Angeles, and this is a show where every week we deal with issues relating to mental health from a holistic perspective, which means a sense of balance between body, mind, and spirit, so that we are increasingly more conscious of how our complete selves function, how we listen to each other, what our bodies are telling us, what our emotions are speaking to us, and what that inner voice is saying, which could be defined as spirit, however you want to define it. Tonight's topic is a common topic, actually. It's something that all of us have or don't have. I'm talking about self-esteem this evening. And in dealing with self-esteem issues, I mean, I have my own simple definition, and basically self-esteem is how we think and feel about ourselves. Some of us think very well and feel very well about ourselves. Some of us think horrible things about ourselves and feel terrible about who we are in the world. And so self-esteem, the word itself, is neutral. It's how we think and feel about ourselves. Assessing where you are on the scale of self-esteem, whether it's high or low, that's the important thing. It's really about being able to take a very personal inventory of what your belief systems are about yourself and how you fit in the world or how you don't fit in the world, how confident you are, how much self-respect you have or don't have. So self-esteem is an integral part of any healing process. Self-esteem is an integral part of almost any client that I might be working with in session. I recently started seeing a gay man who was dealing with some difficulties in a relationship he was having. And on many levels, this is a guy that you wouldn't expect necessarily to be having such difficulties in relationship and attracting the type of guys he attracts on an ongoing basis, because this is a guy with a lot of confidence, a great deal of intelligence, a real clear sense of how he fits into the world in many ways. And yet there is a real blow to him in terms of the type of guys he's constantly attracting. So while in many areas he feels real good about himself, in many areas he reflects that in how he performs on his job and how he takes care of himself, there are still avenues that if this crisis hadn't happened in a current relationship, he wouldn't have gotten to the point of taking an honest look at himself inside and saying, you know, there are things about my life I don't like, things about how I seem to be functioning and how I relate in relationships. And it's hard to take a look at it when you're seen as so confident and capable by so many people in so many ways, and all of a sudden within himself realizing, you know, that's not always the case, and I'm tired of the facade. I'm tired of having to keep projecting that when inside there are things that I'm not liking about myself, things that I'm not happy with in the context of intimacy and relationships. And all of a sudden the mask came off, and a level of honesty that he hadn't been able to express before made an appearance. And there was an article I read today in ANU, and one of the quotes from the article is, what would happen if everyone started telling the truth? Now, remember the name of this show, Tell the Truth Faster. And what would happen if everyone started telling the truth, if they stopped hiding behind images and their own PR and media stuff, which is, you know, our topic last week with Jill Lublin. We talked about self-promotion. Well, people have a difficult time promoting themselves if they don't feel good about themselves. They have a difficult time achieving things if they don't believe that they're capable or that they're worthy. And all that feeds into self-esteem issues. So what would happen if everybody started telling the truth? What would happen if you started admitting what you perceive as your own weaknesses, what you perceive as the things that you hide, you think you hide very well, and you may do a good job at it, but what would happen if you really started being honest about how scared you are very often, how unlovable you feel you are at times? What would happen in the context of your own intimate relationships if your partner knew these things about you? And that you were able to be more vulnerable. Interesting thought. Now, the Gale Encyclopedia of Psychology talks about self-esteem, and they write, psychologists who write about self-esteem generally discuss it in terms of two key components. The feeling of being loved and accepted by others, and a sense of competence and mastery in performing tasks and solving problems independently. So they define self-esteem in two components, the feeling of being loved and accepted by others, and a sense of competence and mastery in performing tasks and solving problems independently. Now, I invite you to think back to your own childhood, or, again, telling the truth about the children in your own life, maybe your own children or nieces or nephews or maybe you're a teacher and you work with kids. Think and observe for a minute your own memories or current circumstances and the children, the child that you were, the children in your lives today, how good do they feel about themselves? How capable do they feel? How are they supported, or how were you supported or not supported growing up in the sense of encouragement and the sense of feeling loved or being loved and accepted unconditionally within your own household, within the school setting, within settings of religious organizations? Look at those children today. Okay? Look at yourself back then. And you will see the beginnings of the messages that they will grow up with that tell them about their self-worth and their capability and how lovable they are or how incapable they are, how unlovable they are. You know, how many of you, I know my parents tried very hard to shield us from information that would have been hurtful. I remember my dad's mom passing away and seeing my dad cry for the very first time, and I was about, I think, 11 years old when she passed away. They're still trying to shield us from the horror of it. We were at the funeral, we were at the cemetery, but forced to stay in the car with my brothers and my cousins instead of being at the gravesite. It was my grandmother that I was grieving over too. Okay? But this sense of discomfort about death, about thinking that they were protecting us in some way from something horrible, when, you know, what message did I get was, you know, I'm not part of this, pay attention to my grief too. So little, not so little things, and little things are constantly being given to children. Again, think back to your own childhood. How much respect did your parents have for you when there were difficult things going on in the family in terms of allowing you to express your own sadness or frustration or anxiety? It's allowing children to feel these things and allowing children to process them and helping them through it that helps them build confidence in their ability to take on difficult things in life. It's the respect we give children, of listening to them, of letting them feel. and teaching them how to move through these things and not stuff them, not use alcohol or drugs or food, not have silences around the dinner table when you know there's something that needs to be talked about. All these things are what starts building children's ability to handle difficult situations throughout life, and the ability to feel good about themselves because they took on a challenge, because something a challenge was handed them, something difficult was presented to them, and instead of pulling back and running away from it, they stepped up and they found solutions and they sought support. Very important stuff. This is where the foundation of self-esteem, obviously, is developed. So we're going to take a short break here now, and when we come back, I'll give you the phone number for callers. If you are listening and want to call in and participate in this, feel free to, and stay tuned. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler, and tonight we're talking about self-esteem issues, and this is a live call-in show. If you feel like making a point, asking a question, or dealing with any issues that may be going on for you tonight, it doesn't have to be on topic even, feel free to call in, and if you're local in the Phoenix area, the number is 480-874-1311. 874-1311, 1311. And if you're listening via the internet and outside the Phoenix area, there's a toll-free number, 1-888-437-7660. That's 888-437-7660. Now, self-esteem. Talking about childhood. On top of the family issues, I mean, how many kids, and maybe, again, your own childhood, how other things affect self-esteem, learning disabilities, physical handicaps or disabilities that children may have. I know myself how much my level of frustration was always up, and I've said before I was diagnosed with attention deficit disorder when I was 45 years old, but it helped me understand a lot more about why I was always so frustrated with things, and that it wasn't the fact that I was, you know, lazy or inadequate. It was the fact that there was something in my brain that just wasn't allowing things to process through in a way that would make things easier for me. And even at age 45, it helped me get in touch with so much of what I went through as a kid and teenager and in college and even professionally. And in getting clear on that actually helped me heal a lot of those old wounds. Just understanding the dynamic was very helpful. But think of what it's doing to a kid who can't keep up in class, who's not understanding as quickly, who may be so easily distracted and is constantly being scolded by the teacher, and then by parents for being problems with behavior. Other kids that are made to be different. I was a very overweight kid also and stuff, and that set me apart and created a lot of teasing by the other kids until I lost a lot of weight as a late teenager. It was a very difficult time. So if you look at these in schools and the weight issues, learning disability issues, the issues of kids who may be deemed as gay or lesbian, who don't fit in because, you know, the boy is a bit too effeminate for the other boy's taste, or the girl is more masculine. All these issues, I mean, think about the sense of alienation and the fear and the teasing and the sense of not being able to be who they really are. And, you know, same thing with adolescents who may be gay or lesbian. The same thing's going on if especially, not especially, but in addition to, if they're not a teenager who is effeminate, but maybe one of the football stars, you know, think of the closet that he's living in and the constant fear that he's living in of being found out, and what that would do to his image. You know, not being honest about who one is. Remember, I asked, what if we all told the truth all the time? Well, if everyone was doing that, then we would find that there are a lot more people out there dealing with the same issues that we were, and we wouldn't feel so alone and so alienated. So there are a lot of other things other than, you know, the messages we're getting from mom and dad, but things that are not so obvious necessarily and some things that are. On the CNN news at the beginning of this hour, I was listening to it before I went on the air, and they talked about this comment that Senator Santorum made about gay, lesbian, and bisexual and transgenders, you know, because of the court deciding whether the Texas law about sodomy, you know, male-to-male sex, is legal or not, constitutional or not. And his comments about equating gay and lesbian orientation with bestiality and adultery and all these other things. I mean, this is a man who's out in the front. He's representing, you know, he's part of our federal government, and saying comments like this that, you know, for kids who are from those Republican families or even the Democratic families, when you hear things like this coming out of your own government, what impact do you think it has? That not only are you being teased at school or potentially would be ripped to shreds if you were out of the closet, but on top of that, you now have your institutions who have always been contributing and creating the negativity that makes it difficult for GLBT kids and teens to develop into real healthy people, necessarily, when it's coming out of the framework of our governments like this at this day and age also, when so many cities and countries are actually passing laws to protect the rights of GLBT people. It's just astounding. And it's no different than, you know, the comments Trent Lott had made, you know, that got him in so much trouble recently. So, again, when we're talking about sexuality issues, when we're talking about anything that we have to hold on to inside, keep a secret, it's impacting our sense of self and our self-image, our confidence, and the sense and our self-esteem, obviously. And it does one of two things. It either causes an individual to retreat and have this constant flow of failures, to get into drugs and alcohol and other addictions, maybe even sex addiction, other things, as their way of numbing, or it motivates them so much to prove themselves worthy to be the best little boy or girl or the best employee ever or the most successful investment person you can imagine, as their way of overcompensating in the other direction, that I have to make sure everybody's just seeing how great and powerful I am because I don't really feel that inside. So it's like that overcompensation. And, you know, a lot of people who are hugely successful in the entertainment industry and in business and other things have a lot of issues with self-esteem, which create problems in their relationships, create problems in holding on to the success sometimes, keeps them from fully enjoying the accomplishments that they're making, keeps them from fully being present in the moment with how much good that they may have been doing because of their successes. So think for a minute, when you see, you know, all these majorly successful people crashing and burning and doing things that you just wouldn't imagine, it's this inner conflict between the achievements that they're making with that part of them that doesn't believe that they're really that capable. So there's this subconscious sabotaging pattern that will go on. You know, again, whether it is within a small community, whether they are nationally or internationally known individuals. You read it in the papers all the time. The overdoses, you know, Winona Ryder is shoplifting, people who are incredibly successful, and all of a sudden you read about the fact that they've also, on top of what they've achieved on their own, they're also skimming the books and stealing from the company and sabotaging everything by having affairs outside their marriage or whatever. It's the same type of pattern. If they don't believe their own PR is real, then they're going to work this pattern of constantly sabotaging. What's truly going on will reflect itself sooner or later outwardly. You know, I mean, like President Clinton is a good example of that too. A major achiever throughout his life. And at the time when he could have been destined for greatness, does things to undermine that potential and that possibility by doing things that you knew sooner or later was going to come out, was going to be known publicly sooner or later. And maybe that was part of the excitement and the risk. You know, that's what a lot of addicts do. You know, it's that challenge and that excitement. You know, like, you know, can I do all this wonderful stuff and still get away with this other stuff? You know, very common. And all of you, no matter what community you're listening, can think of people in your community that have similar behaviors where it's like you're dumbfounded. How could they do this? Why would they do this? Maybe you yourself are now thinking, yeah, that's that thing that I did back then, or this behavior that I know is so silly and so stupid, but I couldn't stop myself, or I wasn't thinking. You know, we all have things in our past. I do, everybody does, that we're not so proud of. And it may be what we might consider something minor, it may be something big, you know, but all of us have those things that we go, I can't believe I did that. Why would I do such a thing? You know, it's going to really damage if anyone finds out. Or, you know, I'm so close to getting my degree, why would I blow off, you know, a test, you know, all those sort of things. So, again, the subconscious wreaks havoc with us when the underlying messages are, I can't, I'm not worthy, I am not capable. All of these things have to be pulled out. It's like extracting teeth sometimes, but they have to get out. You have to be rigorously honest about what those patterns are, what those potential sabotaging behaviors or beliefs or thoughts that you may have. They may just be fantasies that you keep going off into. But you know that if you did them, it could blow everything you've been striving for in your relationship, in your business, health-wise, whatever. So think for a moment, honestly. What is it that's going on within you, within your life, that if you told the truth about, people might be surprised, but you might also get some support? And how would it help the secrecy you live in that keeps you closeted in any way, shape, or form about anything in your life? And the more secrets you have, the more fear you have, the more closeted you maintain, the more facades you keep building to hide behind, then the more the self-esteem issues are very clear. And we're going to take a short break here, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about sex and self-esteem. So stay tuned. This is Stuart Altschul and Tell the Truth Faster. Somewhere over the rainbow. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler, and this I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. I almost forgot what I was going to say there. And again, it's a live call-in show, and be glad to take some calls if you're out there listening in, and if I'm triggering something, or if you disagree with something, or you want to support something I'm saying, or have another issue entirely to talk about in the Phoenix area. The local number is 480, area code 874-1311. 874-1311, and if you're listening via the internet anywhere else in the country, the toll-free line is 888-437-7660. So we've been talking about self-esteem. Now, where does self-esteem also show itself, but in the context of our sexual behaviors and what we do sexually, whether we're heterosexual, homosexual, bisexual, transgender, doesn't matter. Self-esteem issues are constantly expressing themselves in our sexuality, our sexual expressions. And for some people whose self-esteem is really low, they may have a difficult time allowing someone to be close to them physically at all because they have such judgments about their bodies. And I know people whose bodies are incredible and their self-esteem is still low and they still are embarrassed to take their clothes off. And if any of you had looked at them, they're models, they're actors, you know, they're bodybuilders, and yet, and men and women, and yet, you know, there is such a judgment because, again, part of it is they don't believe about who they are and what they look like and what they've achieved in taking care of themselves because part of it for them is an overcompensation. So it's hard for them to even accept the acknowledgement. So for other people who may be overweight, may, you know, I mean, I have a lot of body hair on me, and for a long time I was very self-conscious of that until I realized that there are a lot of men and women that find that very attractive. I may not, and I really had to work through those issues to, you know, be comfortable with my own body, to do the things that I want to for my own grooming, and to appreciate the fact that there are people who are not going to find that attractive and people who will find it extremely hot. And that's a good basic thing to get to. There are people who will always find you attractive. There are always people who will find you attractive. There are always people who will find you unattractive. It's a matter of taste, okay? It's a matter of conditioning, you know, what their erotic fantasies are about, how they eroticize sexual encounters and their own self. And, you know, the one thing I've learned is that, you know, there are people out there for everyone. You need to be willing to identify that. I mean, there are people who will say, you know, I'm 400 pounds, who's going to ever want me type of thing, and there are people who are totally attracted to that, who you might be attracted to if you were 400 pounds, who are actually very attractive people, and there are people who are 400 pounds and they look in the mirror and they see how beautiful they are. You know, we live in a society that says fat is ugly. And, you know, no matter what your health concerns or opinions about health issues may be around, you know, carrying extra weight, it is important that we not buy into the messages of society, of media, and all these other things. I know a lot of people who may be carrying an extra 30 to 100 pounds on them who just adore themselves and have a sense of joy about their lives. And it's not a mask, and it is who they are, and they embrace that, and they live life fully. And, you know, they have a great social life, a great sexual life, you know, great intimate relationships. And, again, when I grew up overweight, I didn't like it. It was really hard on me being a kid. And so at age 16, I took off 55 pounds. Other people can be very comfortable with that extra weight. And to me, it's about self-acceptance. You know, it's like 12 steps say, you know, accept the things you can't change and change the things you can and want to. And that's an important part of it. Now, sexuality, as I talked about earlier, impacts self-esteem. Now, someone was asking me just yesterday, you know, in terms of how being a gay kid, you know, impacted how I felt about myself and everything else, about shame and guilt and all those sort of things. And my comment always is, I have two heterosexual brothers, and they have their own issues with self-esteem. Being gay in and of itself is not necessarily an indicator that, you know, you hate yourself. And I say all the time that the gay and lesbian community has not cornered the market on shame and guilt. You know, everybody can find something, and everybody has usually been programmed to feel bad about themselves for some reason or other. Our issue may be that, you know, we're gay or lesbian, or maybe someone who's bisexual who is having a difficult time finding both men and women attractive and desiring them both to maintain intimate relationships, or being out, or, you know, in some of them they're living in two worlds, and it's difficult for them. So there are a lot of issues that come with the sexuality that affect self-esteem. And again, it's about learning to love yourself. When you hear people like Senator Santorum and so many other very judgmental groups who are constantly equating GLBT issues with the devil, with adultery and bestiality and all this other stuff, what do you think it's doing to the kids who are trying to create their own sense of identity, you know, and feel good about who they are, and, you know, have healthy relationships, and who happen to be interested in same-sex partners? So we do need to be careful as a society what we're teaching and what we're passing on. You may not agree or understand someone else's interests, someone else's orientations, no matter what they're about, but it's who they are. And it's for no one else to make them wrong and to ruin their lives over it, as we've seen has happened. Now, sexual behavior sometimes leads to sexual diseases, whether it's HIV, whether it's gonorrhea, syphilis, herpes, and these things also then impact people's sense of self-worth. I know a number of people with herpes who are heterosexual and some who are homosexual who it's really caused some problems in their ability to be intimate, their fear of rejection, their feeling like damaged goods, you know, all these sort of things that then impact people's lives. And now, you know, they're walking around with a scarlet H on their forehead, you know, and how do I start dating somebody new, and when do I tell them? And it's the same issues that people have always had with HIV since the mid-80s. You know, what will people think of me? When do I tell them? Am I going to be rejected? And, you know, I still today know people who are HIV positive who are still keeping it a secret and are still afraid to empower themselves enough not to have to live in the shadows, so to speak. And yet, on the other hand, you know, a friend of mine recently seroconverted and sent out an email to everyone. He just decided, I'm not going to hold on to this. I want people in my life to know about it. I'm not necessarily happy about it, but it is what it is, and the last thing I need is to feel shame and guilt about any of this. And the more people know about it, the more empowered I feel, and the more support I can get, and the more I can see, you know, who's with me and who's not. And I have a lot of respect for that approach, you know, much healthier. And today I was looking through ANU, Arts and Understanding, which is a magazine that it does focus on HIV and AIDS issues from actually not just a medical point of view, from a much more humanistic point of view, interviews with individuals and what their lives are like. And one column that I've quoted before is called Life Guide by a colleague and friend of mine here in L.A. called Ken Howard, who's a clinical social worker. And he wrote this column in this current one in the April 2003 edition, which is on the stands now if you are trying to get it, or I'm sure there's a website for it. But Ken wrote this thing about when lipodystrophy deflates our self-esteem, let's learn from the past. Now, if you don't know what lipodystrophy is, it is an abnormal, I'm going to read this actually because medical stuff doesn't go well with my brain. Abnormal processing of lipids by the body causing accumulation of fat behind the neck, the dorsal fat pad, or buffalo hump as it's called, in the belly area around the vital organs, in the breasts in women, and other unusual places. So think what it might be like if all of a sudden you had these extra growths on your body and how you'd feel about yourself. We're going to talk more in our final segment. Stay tuned. This is Stuart Altschul and Tell the Truth Faster. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altschuler going into our final segment here. Before we left, I started talking about the issues around sex and how it impacts how we are able to be out in the world, how it makes us feel when we have been infected and now have herpes or HIV or even syphilis and gonorrhea. There's always been such shame attached to any STD, and yet it's so important that people are aware of the symptoms of these diseases and get tested regularly, and even for teenagers to be informed about what these symptoms are, because if they are experiments, they don't know what would be going on, and it's very important for them to know, to put their mind at ease and also to help them be conscious about their behaviors. So I was talking more about with HIV and the lipodystrophy, you know, these fatty growths on the back that make some people look like hunchbacks, or the extension of their, you know, stomachs and women's breasts with, you know, extra fatty tissue on it. These make it more difficult to pretend that you don't have AIDS or HIV. The same way many years ago in the 80s and 90s, the common thing that made it all too obvious for people who had AIDS that they had it when they were out in public with the Kaposi sarcoma, the skin cancer lesions, these purplish bumps on their faces, on their arms, anywhere on their bodies. I know guys that that were diagnosed with AIDS and then at some point got Kaposi's and literally hid in their apartments. They were so ashamed to be seen. You know, what is it? We live in a culture that is about beauty and physical appearance and all this other stuff, and especially within the gay community, but it's true everywhere. And this feeling of being disfigured and not worthy anymore and not fitting in anymore and not desirable or lovable anymore. And I had some friends that as soon as the Kaposi started showing up and spreading, they died very quickly because their whole sense of desire for healing and to be in the world with these obvious signs were too much for them. And so the symptoms increased and they died very quickly. Now, I've known other people who, back then, who had Kaposi's, and they, again, were very empowered people. This was just a part of who they were. Their attitude about their AIDS diagnosis was extremely healthy and accepting, and would go to the beach or the pool or whatever and put on their bathing suit and have Kaposi lesions all over their body and let people see and know and understand that they were creating an example what it was like to be empowered, to have a sense of who you are and to force other people to accept realities of what's going on in the world. The same thing with the lipodystrophy. There are a lot of people who have it and they're still going to the gym, they're not hiding. There are other people who are going through all sorts of surgical procedures in order to correct it. And, some people can afford that, some people can't, but insurance companies don't pay for that. But it's still a part of a self-esteem issue. There are medications that need to be taken, and sometimes these are the side effects of it. And to be able to live in an empowered way with whatever physical condition that you may have, to be able to change the things that you can and accept the things that you can't, and still create a sense of who you are is courageous and powerful and accepting and living a life that is as normal as you can make it under the circumstances, but as involved in life as you can be with whatever physical things allow. And those are inspirational people to me, and they are to a lot of people. So now we've talked about self-esteem in general. There are things you can do, actually, to assess your own self-esteem issues and heal them. There are a lot of books out there on self-esteem. A good therapist could help you in dealing with this. But a good way to start is something I got from Sandra Ray in the Loving Relationships training. And one way to start is with a sentence completion list. And you start the sentence with, I am. And you just keep listing adjectives, and see what comes out. I am smart. I am attractive. I am controlling. I am disorganized. I am ugly. I am stupid, and see what that list turns out to. And remember, what would happen if everybody told the truth? Tell the truth when you're doing this list. And then share it with your therapist or see what things are on that list that you believe are positive and things that you believe are not positive. And the things that are not positive, obviously, those are the things you want to work on changing. Where did they come from? What are the beliefs that are attached to them that keep them so solid as a part of how you see yourself? And when it comes to actually doing the healing work on self-esteem, you can do things like affirmations, pleasuring yourself with massage, treating yourself to things that you wouldn't normally do, rewarding yourself when you've met a challenge and gotten through it, doing a success diary every day, so you're acknowledging every success you have every day. And they don't have to be, I climbed Mount Everest. They could be, I made a phone call and I was afraid to do it. So a success journal. In other words, you start reinforcing the positives in there. Are you in a career that you really love? And if not, why are you there? Why are you doing it? And then you get some help in making some changes there. Do volunteer work. Be of service to others. And if I had more time, I could give you a much longer list, but you get the idea. Nothing will change without you efforting, and all of us need some help in that. So whether you find a therapist or some good self-help books or you talk to a friend, be honest and do it. Feel good about yourself. This is Stuart Altshuler. Listen in next week to Tell the Truth Faster, same time, same place. Good night. Oh.
that I heard of love.